Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another Bike James podcast. In this podcast, I'm going to do some rider Q&A. I get some great questions, and so I've decided that like once a month, I'm going to start doing a rider Q&A podcast where I'm going to address a few of the better questions that have come my way that month. And so I've got a couple good ones today, including are e-bikes good or bad for mountain biking? So I know people will have some opinions on that. So be interested to hear what you think of my thoughts on it. So before we get started, remember to check out bikejames.com for all your mountain bike strength and conditioning program needs. You're going to find the best and really like some of the best proven mountain bike training programs available. I mean, I've been around since 2005 doing this, worked with some of the top riders and teams in the world, as well as working with just everyday riders, right? Like that's really been my focus for quite a while, is just that average everyday rider, which is what I am. I've never been some hardcore racer or anything like that. So really my goals now are really riding for a lifetime. How do I do this and continue to feel good and function well, both on and off the bike? And so that's really been a major focus of my workout programs over the last few years. And so when you're there, you can check out some free workouts and stuff. You know, got my blog there with a ton. I mean, going back just years and years and years with videos and articles and, you know, other podcasts and stuff that you can check out on mountain bike training and philosophy and all sorts of different stuff. And you can also sign up for the newsletter. So be sure and do that. You'll get a free isometric workout. And every week I send out two or three newsletters with podcast updates and new info, new articles and stuff. So yeah, be sure you're on the newsletter if you're not already. And also be sure to check out pedalinginnovations.com, which is where you can learn more about the Catalyst pedal, which is the pedal that I created that allows the front and back of your arch, the heel and the ball of your foot, to be able to apply pressure into the pedal. So it's long enough to attach the front and back of your arch, but it's no wider than your foot. So it really disappears underneath your foot and allows you to feel like you're standing on the ground. It's really the double pressure point system that unlocks what the Catalyst pedal is able to do, that when you're trying to apply pressure into a platform that is centered on a rotating axis, like any pedal is, a clipless pedal, even the smallest clipless pedal out there, is still by definition, that is a platform that you are standing on and it is centered on a rotating axis. So any pedal out there is going to fall under this definition. And when you're trying to apply pressure into a platform like that with a single pressure point, it's very difficult to do right. And if you get off the center of that at all, if the ball of your foot isn't centered over the axle perfectly, you're going to start getting unstable forces. You're going to start getting the pedal wanting to roll. And so really the best thing, the most efficient thing, is to have a double pressure point system applying pressure into your pedal. And that's what the Catalyst pedal allows. So again, it's not about midfoot or, you know, really your foot position. It's about how many pressure points are you able to get into your pedal, and your foot functions best in that context when you have that double pressure point system. So you can learn more about the science and stuff at pedalinginnovations.com. But be sure and check that out as well. So getting into the podcast here, or the questions for the rider Q&A. So the first one is kind of I don't know that I've ever had anyone actually just flat out ask me, are e-bikes good or bad for mountain biking? But I've had several riders ask me different questions, you know, should I get one? What do you think of them? And so I wanted to share my thoughts and opinions on e-bikes, because they are a big part of the mountain biking conversation these days, and you know, what is the impact that they are having and are going to have, and is that good or bad, and how do we, you know, kind of deal with this relatively new development in our sport. So you know, before I start getting into my opinion, excuse me, I think that it's important that, really, like so many other things in life, you've got to put some context on that opinion. And so, you know, like I mentioned, I've had several riders who I've talked to that just assume that I, you know, don't like e-bikes. You know, you probably don't like e-bikes, you know, the making things easier. And that goes against, you know, you being a fitness coach, and really just kind of my philosophy of life in general is, you know, be wary of things that are just there to make things easier. They rarely make you better. Right. And so, but that isn't necessarily the case. So, you know, you got to put it in a context. Like, what are we talking about when we're talking about the e-bike? And so, you know, opinions vary wildly on this subject. I mean, this is like, you know, gun control or abortion in the mountain biking world. I mean, you have very, very passionate opinions on both ends of the spectrum. You have people who see the e-bike as the best thing since the invention of the safety cycle itself, right? Like the bike that we know and love today is that's the safety cycle. It's been around for, you know, like 150 or fewer years. But, you know, you have people on the other side of the spectrum who see the e-bike as a sign of the coming apocalypse, right? Like Donald Trump was the first sign and e-bikes are the second. And, you know, so it's you get some pretty passionate opinions on both ends of the spectrum. But it seems to me that the problem, like it is with a lot, you know, with these subjects in general, these things that you get really passionate opinions on opposite ends of the spectrum, is that you can have two people that are talking about the same word or term, and yet they're talking about two totally different things, two totally different contexts for those words and terms, right? So on one hand, you've got people who see the e-bike as a great way for riders to ride further and longer than they would have, either due to age, right? Like maybe you're an older rider who's just not able to ride like you used to, and an e-bike's kind of giving you a new lease on things, or an injury, right? Like you've had some sort of injury, and again, the e-bike is giving you a new lease on life, and or, you know, your mountain bike life, and allowed you to get out and ride and enjoy the trails like you wouldn't be able to on a regular bike. Or maybe it's just your own preference, right? Like maybe you just like e-bikes and you just like to be able to go out and ride further and longer. And some, you know, people are like, man, that's great. Like the people have this opportunity now is amazing. And e-bikes are awesome because of that. And then on the other hand, you've got people who don't like e-bikes, but what they're typically talking about are people who are riding e-bikes who are the weekend warrior type, right? Like they're using an e-bike to make things easier. Like they're overweight and out of shape. They don't want to get in shape. They're just using the e-bike to make things easier. They're, you know, like I said, they're a weekend warrior. You know, they're these people that bounce around from like one outdoorsy activity to another outdoorsy activity. You know, they don't really take the time to learn the culture and the rules and how to preserve the things that they're doing, right? And they just want to be able to ruin as many people's experience on the trail with their ignorance of trail rules and etiquette, right? So the e-bike allows them to ruin as many people's experience as possible. So the problem is that both of these types of riders exist, right? I've seen them both. I mean, living here in Fruta, there are a lot more people around here riding bikes than there used to be. And you see both of these riders represented in the e-bike groups. And so I completely support the first group, right? Like if you're a mountain biker, you know, who is using the e-bike in the way that I just described, then I completely support that. I think e-bikes are fine in that context, but I don't support the second, right? That second context I think is nonsense, right? Like you can call me an elitist, please. I really don't mind. But I think that there is more to being a mountain biker than owning a mountain bike. Okay, like the industry just simply wants to grow the sport to sell more bikes and equipment. They're not really worried about what's best for the sport. And so e-bikes are a great way to get more people into the sport who really maybe don't have any business getting into our sport. Right? Like I again, call me an elitist, but mountain biking is not for everyone. It's not. Like I think everybody should have the opportunity to do it, right? Like I'm not saying that there's a certain type of person or class of person or whatever that like, oh no, you don't get, you know, the opportunity to ride. I think everybody should get the opportunity to ride. It's just we all know it's not for everyone, right? Like they've got this saying in jiu-jitsu, and it applies to mountain biking as well, right? Like jiu-jitsu is for everyone. except for after the first month, it's only for about half of those people. And then after a few years, it's only for a few rare savages, right? Like, that is mountain biking in general, right? Like, it's, you see how many people get into it and the percentage of people that are still doing it after 5, 10 years, right? Like, don't pat yourself on the back just because you've made it through like 2 or 3 years and think like, oh, I'm a veteran at this, right? Like, let's see you get through 5, 10 years, you know, 20 years, right? Like, I've got 20 plus years of riding under my belt. Like, you know, the amount of people who make it that long riding is way smaller than the number of people who start, right? So just by the nature of the beast, it's not for everyone. People are going to get into it and they're going to realize like, man, this is too hard. You know, I may fall and get hurt. It's bloody. You know, maybe they're just really good at something else and they want to just spend their time, energy, and effort doing that. And that's fine, right? So at the end of the day, we got to get past this really kind of suicidal idea for our sport that mountain biking is for everyone. And we've got to do everything that we can to make it as easy as possible and as accessible as possible to everyone possible, right? Like, that is the weekend warrior outdoorsy type is going to have a negative impact on our sport in the long run. I truly believe that. I believe there's going to be negative consequences for everyone else in our sport if we don't get some sort of handle on these people who aren't mountain bikers, but they're out there riding bikes and they're using our trails. And like I said, they're ruining everyone's experience. And again, this isn't just e-bikes. Like, this is really kind of my point, right? This is where I want to kind of like bring this, you know, sum this or bring it home. My opinion on this is that this is really an industry focused problem, not an e-bike problem. The industry has been pushing this agenda for a long, long time. Right. So I remember when I first started riding and everything was free ride, right? Like, if a bike had 4 inches or more of travel, it was a free ride bike. Free ride was it. That was the hot thing for everybody to be doing. It was awesome, right? It was a great time to be a mountain biker. But you realize that, oh, the industry is just slapping this name free ride on everything out there, even things that had no business being termed a free ride bike because that term sold. And then all of a sudden overnight, the term free ride became a dirty word. And personally, I just think that they realize at some point that you're not going to be able to sell free ride to the masses, right? Like, free ride, if anything, like, that is a hard, dangerous, bloody, you know, you're going to get banged up and hurt doing that type of sport, or, you know, type of niche within our sport. And it looks great, right, on film. If they're filming commercials, they got somebody jumping a big gap or doing some sort of like free ride style move, but you're not going to sell that to your average Joe. You're definitely not going to get some road cyclist to, you know, try to free ride on the weekend every once in a while or something like that, right? So if you're going to try to attract more casual participants into our sport, then you've got to change the image of the sport. And so for a minute, it was cross country. Like, it was insane. All of a sudden overnight, like, free ride was gone. It was like it never existed. And they're trying to shove these super lightweight carbon cross country bikes with inverted stems down our throat and telling us like, oh, this is what you want now. This is the new thing. And again, why? Because that's easier to sell. It's easier to sell to that casual participant, or that's easier to talk your average road cyclist into, hey, you know, why don't you try mountain biking? You know, it's basically like road riding on dirt, right? Much easier to have that conversation. So, but then enduro came along, and enduro was like the biggest godsend ever for the mountain bike industry, because now they got something that was actually mountain biking again that they could sell to the masses. And, you know, yeah, now everything's enduro, right? It's like even a joke when you see something with enduro this or enduro that. It's like, okay, I see what's going on here, right? Like, this is just another, you know, the industry is latched on to another niche that it sees an ability to try to make money off of. And that's what's happening with the e-bike. Like, the e-bike is that new thing, right? That is the next thing after enduro for the mountain biking industry to try to grow the industry to that next level is the e-bike. And man, this is like the perfect thing for them. I mean, again, it really lowers the bar significantly for people to be able to get out on the trail. And again, that can be either good or bad, right? Like, the e-bike is a tool. And how you use that tool is ultimately going to determine if it's good or bad. And if that tool is being used to, you know, like I said, legitimately help real riders and real mountain bikers enjoy riding more, or as a legitimate way to get people into our sport who want to be in our sport, right? Not as like this weekend touristy outdoorsy thing where it's like, well, this week I'm going to mountain bike and next weekend I'm going to go, you know, bouldering and then I'm going to do stand up paddleboarding. And it's like this, you know, this outdoorsy lifestyle where they don't really get into any one of the cultures that they are in, or maybe they have one and they're dabbling in all these others and they don't really get into the culture and understand how to behave. What is the etiquette? How do we help preserve this activity for future generations to enjoy and not have it get, you know, in trouble and have trails being shut down and have, you know, trail access being threatened because all of a sudden there's a lot more riders on the trail and a lot of them just don't care, right? Like if those trails get shut down, they don't care because they're just going to hop on to the next outdoorsy activity. And so it doesn't really matter to them to learn how to behave. And so it's that is a problem, right? So again, I think that that is an industry focused problem. It's been a problem for a long time. I have seen the watering down and dumbing down of our sport for damn near a decade and a half now. And it is, yeah. So like I said, it's an industry focused problem. It's not an e-bike problem. E-bikes are fine, right? Like, it's how are we using these things? And somehow as riders, man, we got to learn how to hold the industry more accountable for this stuff. But, you know, we like the shiny gadgets. And like I said, it gets tough to differentiate because, you know, you're looking at the e-bike and you're like, man, I'm a rider and I can use it in these ways. And that's great. And I know other riders can use it in that way. And that's great. And so you just, you know, for whatever reason, you just don't see that, man, there is a negative impact for this thing as well. Just like the opposite side, you can see the negative impact and be anti e-bike, but you have to acknowledge that there's also a positive impact as well. So how do we maximize the positive and minimize the negative? But first we got to have that difficult conversation of, well, what is the negative? What is the real negative? And then how do we isolate and try to mitigate that rather than just have this blanket thing of like e-bike's bad, right? So let's have a little bit more nuanced conversation, which I know is not the theme of the moment for our society, but you know, as riders, especially if you're listening to this podcast, I think that you know better and we can probably expect better of ourselves. So, all right, so that's it, man. E-bikes. I mean, I'll also say I've never ridden an e-bike. I mean, I've ridden like, you know, some of those street e-bikes. I've had some, you know, friends that have had some of those ones you just get around town on, but I've never been on a legitimate mountain bike e-bike. And man, I'm sure they're fun. Right? Like you put me on a bike and I'll have fun. That's the other thing, right? Like what kind of rider are you if you can't figure out how to have fun on a bike? I don't care what it is, right? It can be a townie bike. I'm going to have some fun on that thing. So it's on the bike. It's the Indian, not the arrow, right? So like, don't get so caught up in the bike. And I'm sure they're fun. I'm sure there's advantages to them. I'm not against them or, you know, against trying them. But I will say, like, I've never ridden one myself. So I can't give you a super informed opinion as far as like, oh, this is definitely the differences and what you should do. And even then, like the e-bike that I ride is going to be different than another e-bike. It's going to be different than another e-bike. I mean, if that's one thing that the big wheeled thing taught me is that, you know, just because one big wheel bike feels this way definitely doesn't mean that all big wheel bikes feel that way. And so I'm sure that, you know, a lot of it comes down to the individual e-bike itself. So like I said though, how are you using it? And if you're using it in a way that's in line with the spirit of mountain biking, then great. But if you're not and you're abusing the spirit of mountain biking with your e-bike, then I'm not down with that. So again, just my opinion. So take it for what it's worth. All right. So let's move on to our next rider question. And so this is another good one, and one that I get in various forms on a pretty regular basis. And so this particular question, this is from a 40-year-old male rider. He's doing a full body style workout. So I'm assuming, you know, he's not doing some sort of split where he's doing like biceps and legs. You know, he's doing some sort of push, pull, squat, hinge, right? Like the full body style movement based workouts, 4 days a week, doing all the big compound lifts, and he's made great gains, right? So he's gotten stronger, he's put on muscle. My question is, I want to be more proficient on my rides, but I don't want to lose the aesthetic look that has been achieved. Like, basically, he's put on some muscle and it looks good. And so he doesn't want to lose that look and the muscle and sacrifice that to become better at riding if that's possible. And then, you know, that's his question, is this possible? And so, and I'll get this question in many different ways. People will be worried about losing their gains, right? They've worked really hard and they've gotten strong. And so they're afraid that if they cut back in the gym, that they're going to lose those gains. And so how do they balance that? Because, man, they've worked real hard, right? Like, again, you got to remember, like, as much as people, you know, you may love riding and are just sitting there like, what the hell? What kind of a stupid ass question is that, man? Like, you know, if you lose all your muscle and you lose all your gains, but you're riding faster and better, well, then that's the best thing, right? Like, okay, great. That's how some people look at it. Some people have a balance, right? Like, they're trying to balance achievements in different areas. And I fall in the second category. Like, I definitely do not, like, in my mind, it's the question is, how do you be a good rider without looking like your average skinny cyclist? Or, you know, like, how do you maintain that muscle and the look that goes along with it? Because, I mean, let's admit it, like, it doesn't feel bad to look good, right? Like, having a little muscle, having a little definition, you know, looking good, you look good, you feel good, you ride good. Like, that's why we get nice bikes, right? Like, we're going to take care of our bikes and try to make them look good because it makes us just feel good, which makes us ride good. Like, take the same care of your body. The same thing applies there. So, you know, it's not a vain thing to be proud of what you have achieved through your training and want to maintain that while also improving as a mountain biker. And, you know, again, I think that too many riders out there, especially mountain bikers, right? Like, we are not road cyclists. Like, road cycling and mountain biking are two completely different sports. You know, it's like saying that ball sports are the same. Just, you know, someone plays soccer and someone else, you know, plays, you know, American football. And it's like, oh, it's the same thing, right? It's like, no, they're not. They're not the same thing at all. And so just because they both use balls and you're kicking them with your feet here and there, it's like it's not a and so that's the same thing that happens with road cycling and mountain biking. I mean, I talk about this stuff all the time. It's one of the biggest mistakes that mountain bikers make is falling for the lie that cycling is cycling and that, you know, cycling is usually a code word for road riding. And so training and looking at things like a road rider is not what you want to do to be good at mountain biking. And so, you know, and part of this thing with being a road rider is like that having a skinny, you know, specifically skinny upper body, right? Like, is you don't need that muscle mass for anything. And so the more you weigh, the more weight you're having to carry on your bike, right? So for them as a sport specific adaptation, it makes sense for them to be skinny. But as a mountain biker, that's not what we want, right? So it's actually going against what you would want to look like and be able to perform well on your bike. Like, you need muscle mass. You need to be more muscular and more athletic than a road cyclist. Like, you should look more like a BMX rider than a road cyclist, right? If you're going to look at two different types of cyclists and say, okay, I need to look like one of these two, you would pick the BMX rider. And the BMX riders are usually, you know, more muscular and carry more muscle mass than the road cyclist does. And again, the demands of BMX riding are much closer to the demands of mountain biking than road riding are. When you really like break it down and look at what is going on for road riding. Again, I'm not talking about cross country racing or, you know, like super long distance riding. I'm just talking about like an average trail rider going out for an hour, 2 hour long ride. Like, what are they doing in that time? That, you know, you're looking at something that's much more akin to BMX riding than road riding in that context. And so you need, you know, muscle will help with that. So this is also a great goal to have as you get older, because at a certain point, your body will start to lose muscle mass. It's just there's no getting around it. And so working on having and maintaining a healthy level of muscle mass, that's an important part of riding for a lifetime. You know, like that concept, I think I've already mentioned it once before, of you know, focusing on riding and feeling, you know, performing and feeling well both on and off the bike, you know, today and into the future, right? I don't want to sacrifice, you know, tomorrow's me for a little bit of performance today at this point. Like my goal is more like riding for a lifetime. And so, you know, you could argue that, well, you know, if you lost a little muscle mass, you might be faster on your bike because, you know, blah, 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 blah. Maybe, but that's not my goal, right? My goal is riding for a lifetime. And I know that having the muscle mass is going to help me be healthier longer as I get older. And so that is an important goal, important thing for me to work on and try to maintain, especially as I'm getting older. You know, I'm 45 now, and so I'm, you know, thinking about these things more than I was when I was 25. You know, another reason that you want to maintain your muscle mass, and this is more of a sport-specific one, but muscle is the best armor you can put on your body. Okay, the more muscle mass you have, the more stress your body can take before something goes snap. And, you know, again, this is something that road riders don't need to worry about like we do. Like, we are going to crash. Okay, it's like the old saying, like, there's two types of riders, those that have crashed and those that are waiting to crash. Like, that's it. Okay, you're going to crash. If you ride mountain bikes long enough, you're going to crash hard. And you need to prepare for that. So how do you prepare for that? Well, having muscle mass, having mobility, that's another aspect of this, which, you know, isn't necessarily specific to this question, but is another thing that you really got to focus on as you get older, because things get tight. And then again, if you wreck and a joint or something gets pulled into a extreme position, the less mobility you have, the less you're going to be able to get pulled into these positions before something snaps or breaks or gets really hurt. And so muscle mass and mobility are those two, you know, trump cards that you got in your back pocket that if you go down, you're able to pull out and go, all right, you know, this is going to increase my odds of getting out of this better, right? There's no guarantee of getting out of a wreck. I mean, that's the thing. You're rolling the dice. Sometimes you're going to crap out. But you definitely increase your odds of not crapping out if you've got some muscle mass and you've got some mobility. So, like I said, this is a good goal, both from one, there's nothing wrong with wanting to look good. Two, this is an important part of riding for a lifetime and being able to ride well both now and into the future. And three, like, there is a direct performance benefit that you're going to get from having more muscle mass as it pertains to dealing with the realities of wrecking on our bikes. So, you know, with all that said, you need to get better at riding your bike. You need to ride your bike a lot. Okay. And this is where the balance comes in. So, you know, right now you're like, oh man, I need, you know, I really need to focus on my workout. But we need to get back to the original question, which is, well, how do I get better at my riding? How do I get really proficient at riding and maintain this? Right. So then to answer that question, we need to figure out, how do we balance this need to ride a lot with also the need to maintain our strength and muscle mass? How do we do this? So a couple tips, a couple things that I would suggest for anybody who's in this predicament. And this also applies as well to just like strength gains in general. So, you know, if you've worked real hard and you've gotten really strong on some lifts in the gym and you want to try to maintain those strength levels, then this advice also works for that. So anytime you're looking at, hey, I've worked really hard, I've built something in the gym, but I want to start transitioning more to focusing on the bike more, how do I try to maintain what I've built without just letting it all, you know, go away? So the first thing is that you're not going to be able to lift 4 days a week while also focusing on riding. So if you're going to get better at riding, I would suggest that you're going to ride 3 to 4 days a week. So if you're not able to ride at least 3 days a week, I'd struggle to say that you're in like a riding focused block where you're really going to be improving at riding a bunch. Okay, you got to be getting on the bike 3 to 4 times a week to really be in that riding focused block, that riding focused, you know, section or, you know, area of your training program, or really just time of your life, right? Like, this is just the time in your life where I want to focus more on riding. Well, cool. Then you need to ramp that up to 3 to 4 days a week. You know, maybe five, but I always caution people to err on the side of caution, right? So don't try to see how much you can do before you break, because people usually screw that one up and they end up breaking. So see how little you can do to still see good results. That's going to be what's going to get you through things sustainably without running the risk of injury. So, you know, trying to ride 5 days a week, maybe you can do it, but even professional riders can struggle with a, you know, that heavy of a training or riding schedule for long periods of time. And so again, you're looking at needing to be able to do this for a sustained period of time. If you're like, you know, I got 2 weeks. Yeah, great. Ride 5 days a week for the next 2 weeks, right? That's not really going to impact things one way or the other, right? So again, you're going to need to do this for, you know, 6, 8 plus weeks for you to, you know, you need to consistently be riding at this level, you know, 3 plus days a week for a long period of time for you to really, really, really see good results on the bike and really start to get improve your proficiency, your endurance, your skills. All these things will really start to improve when you're able to ride for a consistent period of time. And this is why injuries, you want to avoid them like the plague, right? Because if you're hurt, it doesn't matter how fit you are, and you're also breaking your consistency. And consistency is one of the best performance enhancing things that you can do to get better over the long run, especially. So from a consistency standpoint, that, you know, 3, maybe 4 days a week is going to be something that most riders can sustain. But to do that, you're going to have to cut back on your lifting. And so instead of lifting 4 days a week, what I'd recommend is doing 2 days a week of isometrics. Again, I sound like a broken record with this, but they are that foundational tension skill element. So something like the Atomic Strength Training Program that you can find at bikejames.com. But 2 days a week of isometrics, and then 1 to 2 days a week in the gym doing your movement based workouts. So this is where you would get your squats and your deadlifts and those big compound lifts. And so isometrics are going to help maintain your strength and your muscle mass. And then you're still going to be able to get into the gym and move, you know, do the movements themselves. But remember, the idea when you're doing this is that your strength is coming from the isometrics. So when you go in the gym and you're doing your movement-based stuff, this is just skill training. You're just working on the movement skill of the exercise. So you need to keep the intensity level to 80% or less, which is going to help keep you from going so hard and so heavy that you end up kind of with that, like, man, I'm so sore that I can't ride the next day sort of thing that starts to interfere with your consistency with riding. And so so that strategy there will work really well for balancing riding and lifting. And remember, always err on the side of caution. Get your 3 days a week of riding in, but if you need to cut out something, like cut down a day in the gym, right? So that's what you would cut down. When you ride, you want to focus most of your rides on shorter rides, okay, like 45 to 90 minutes. And on these rides, focus more on skills and efficiency rather than trying to just go fast or work hard. So you can either pick a certain skill that you're really focused on, or I like to play a game of how little can I pedal, right? So I'm just trying to see how efficient I can be and how little I can pedal, really work my standing pedaling, you know, so this will automatically keep the intensity of the ride a little lower. So it'll be, you know, in like that 80% range, which is what you want. You want the bulk of your rides to be in that 80% range. I call it the skills focus rides. And so, and these shorter rides are going to not trigger the muscle wasting effect like longer rides will. Like the longer you go, right? Like 4+ hour rides, one of your body's adaptation is like, I got to drop weight. Right. So if you're not going out for super long rides all the time, then it's not going to trigger that, drop weight signal like doing that will. And so shorter, more intense rides will actually help preserve muscle mass compared to the longer endurance, you know, where you're just grinding it out for hours and hours and hours. So, and once every like fifth ride or so, which if you're doing three rides a week would be about once every 2 weeks, you know, go for one of those just like go fast or go hard workouts where you're really pushing it, or go for like a really long ride. But, and that's fine, right? So like testing where you're at, so to speak. But doing that all the time is what is going to lead to that muscle wasting. You know, you're eventually going to burn out. If every ride you go out on is just really long, or, you know, you're just going hard and fast and that's just what you do, then eventually you're just going to hit a wall, right? Like you're not going to be able to recover from that. And so it's all about recovery. Like what are you, the inputs you're putting in to your body and then letting it recover to give you the outputs that it wants. And so if you're getting in the gym and working out, like I recommended, you're going on your rides and doing what I recommended there, then the inputs are going to be what we want. And you should have enough recovery capacity to recover from what you're doing to see the results that you're looking for, which is getting better at riding while also maintaining your gains in the gym. And we, you know, gains with a Z there. But anyways, so that's what I would recommend. That'd be my recommendation for that. And again, this would be the same if you're trying to maintain strength levels or really anything that you've built in the gym. This is going to be a good strategy for you there. So right on. So that's going to do it for this podcast. That's our two rider Q&A questions. If you've got a question that you would like for me to answer and perhaps address on the podcast, you can always hit me up at james@bikejames.com. I'm always happy to help. It's what I'm here for. And remember, check out bikejames.com, sign up for the newsletter, and get the Atomic Strength Training Program. That is that foundational cornerstone thing that so many people are missing. Like our fitness culture is really missing the boat on isometrics. This is going to be one of those things. We're going to look back in, like, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. And just like right now, we you know, look back, and I don't think justifiably, right? I think there's something to bodybuilding style workouts. They're not all stupid. But, you know, like we look at now how athletes would use bodybuilding style workouts. Like it was more a matter of misusing the workout style. But, you know, you've got an athlete who wants to, you know, get better at riding, doing 3 sets of 10 on the leg curl and leg extension and leg press. And, you know, we look back now with our knowledge of functional training and movement, and we kind of, you know, laugh at that. Like, oh my God, can you believe that they used to do that? Like, I really believe that's where we're going to be with isometrics. Like, we're going to look back in 10, 20 years and be like, oh my God, do you believe that people were just not doing isometrics and that it wasn't a part of their overall strength training strategy? Like, you know, that's kind of, you know, ridiculous. Just like we'll think that, you know, it was ridiculous doing leg curls and leg press and leg extension for 3 sets of 10 was. But you can avoid that, right? You can be ahead of the curve, get the Atomic Strength Training Program, and get the only isometric workout designed for mountain bikers, you know, by mountain bikers. So I know what the demands of our sport are, and this is the workout that is going to get you stronger. It's going to improve your high tension cardio. It's going to put less wear and tear on your body. Just so many great things that you get from isometrics. So make sure you check that out. And then again, pedalinginnovations.com, the Catalyst pedals, 30-day money back guarantee on those bad boys. We are the only company in the cycling industry that offers a 30-day money back guarantee. That's how strongly we believe in our product. No one else will back up their product like we do. And we do that because I know once you try these pedals, then you're going to be contacting us because you need to order more, because you need to get some for all your bikes, because now all the other pedals that you have feel stupid and just too small. But so anyways, check that out, and you can find out more about the science and all the other stuff behind the Catalyst pedal there as well. It is really the only pedal that's based on science out there. There's no other pedal company that can say that there are scientific studies that they have based the design of their pedal on. You may think that there are, you probably assume that there are, but there aren't, right? So it's kind of funny that way. A lot of things that we assume about the cycling industry, like we just assume there was this council of, you know, in 1954 of smart people that came along and put their stamp on all the stuff that we take it, you know, for granted today. And a lot of times, not just in the cycling industry, but in a lot of places, that's just not the case. There's a lot of just common knowledge that we take for granted that when you dig into it, you realize, like, holy crap, like this was never actually really proven, or there may be things pointed in the other direction. So it's, you know, the your pedals, pedal stroke, foot position, all those things on the bike are one of those things that we just assumed that someone had actually looked into and studied and confirmed, but that's not the case. So if you want to see the science yourself, you can check it out there at pedalinginnovations.com. I've also got the Flat Pedal Revolution Manifesto. You can Google that and download that for free. And I've got all sorts of stuff in there that just dispels all the myths about the superiority of clipless pedals and foot position and all the other stuff that, again, I used to believe as well. When I got into riding, I tried clipless pedals because I believe, like everyone else, that you needed them, that you had to have them, you had to pull up on the backstroke, you know, all this stuff that we get told that turned out to be completely untrue. So, but anyways, the result of all of that research and time, energy, and effort is the Catalyst pedal. And so you can take advantage of that at pedalinginnovations.com. So that's going to do it. I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this podcast, and I will talk to everybody next time.